Hi, thanks for joining us today. This is Bonnie Wallace, author of The Hollywood Parents Guide, and today my guest on this podcast is Wendy Jaffet. Wendy is a producer of films for both the big screen and TV. She's known for producing An Education, The Italian Job, The Brothers Bloom, I'm Not There, Disney Descendants, Descendants 2, and many more films. Wendy, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Bonnie.
So, I saw an interview with you recently where you shared that you'd begun life wanting to be a professional dancer. Can you share how that led you to becoming an executive producer? That's not a straight line.
Not a straight line, no. When I was a teenager, I was growing up in New York City, and I was studying to be a ballet dancer, actually, very specific. My training was mostly at American Ballet Theater. And I came to ballet late. I started when I was already 13, which in ballet is really old. But I loved it so passionately. And I sort of ate up and educated myself about everything about it. And I really wanted to dance Balanchine Ballets, which is the New York City Ballet. That was sort of a dream to me. And I actually auditioned for the School of American Ballet when I was, I'm going to reveal that I lied, I was 17 years old and I told the school that I was 15.
Well, you're 17 playing 15.
Exactly. And I got a call back. Actually, they told me to go and get a little bit stronger and come back in 6 months. By then, I was 18.
Oh my God.
And I told them I was 16, and they said, "You're really too old, dear."
At 16, or they saw that
they thought I was 16, and I was too old for the level where I was in terms of strength, and I didn't have, you know, the decade of training behind me. So I decided to go to college, and I actually think that was the best road for me in the big picture anyway. I went to Oberlin and to Barnard my junior year, actually, because I was from New York City, and Oberlin, as much as I loved it, was very isolated in the cornfields of Ohio. So at Barnard, I took a class in dance history, and the woman that taught the class was the dance critic for New York Magazine at the time. Her name is Toby Tobias, and she's one of my mentors, and I just completely responded to her, adored her, and she really taught me about dance as a multimedia art form, not just being the ballet dancer who's on the stage, but there are people who write about dance, there are people who film dance, there's all kinds of ways to work with, whether it's Balanchine specifically or great dancers in general. And actually, Toby introduced me when I was 20 years old and hadn't even finished college yet to a woman named Judy Kinberg. And Judy Kinberg produced the dance series on public television for this series called Great Performances, which is a really world-renowned art series.
Yeah.
And Judy, who I'm still friends with, you know, it's 35 years later now, hired me as her assistant. So which was like my dream job. I didn't even know you could learn about filming dance for TV. This is all news to me. And I graduated in half a year. I did my senior year of school in half a year. And Judy hired a temp. And I started working for WNET for Great Performances when I was 20 years old, right before Christmas. And that hooked me on film and television in a milieu that I was already in love with.
That's so cool. So dance basically was your entree
totally
into film and TV.
Totally. Something I had true passion about, that I loved being around, that I felt personally connected to. And for me, learning production, which is the making of film and television, that gave me a skill that I could make a living with, a technical expertise, say, because I started working in the office. Judy had me doing time code notes, which is while you're filming, you're in the truck or in the booth, and you're making records of what each camera is recording. I helped put the productions together. I took the notes into post-production and sat with the editor and told him where he could find what-on-what reels. So I learned in a literal, physical way what it took to put together a television program.
The hands-on nuts and bolts of
absolutely.
It. But you didn't study that in school, did you?
No, I majored in English literature in college. I'm a big reader, and I actually think the way that I succeeded in as much as I have producing movies is based in my experience as an English major, because movies are stories. They're visual stories, but they're all rooted in the written word, right? Every movie is based on a screenplay. Many movies are developed from books or short stories. And I love storytelling. And after I worked for a few years for Dance in America, the BBC, the Muppets in New York, so I did physical production for all these great people. I then moved to LA when I was, I think, 27. And the first job I had was a development job. I didn't even know what development was, coming from production in New York. But I sent my resume blind to movie producers in Hollywood who had produced movies that I admired. And one of the producers I met was a man named Larry Turman, who had produced The Graduate.
Oh.
And his partner, David Foster, had produced McCabe and Mrs. Miller. And they met me and they offered me a director of development job. And I didn't even know what it was, but I had a friend I could call and he said, take the job, take the job. And basically, I was reading screenplays all day and meeting writers and the agents that represented the writers. So I had the physical production experience, and then I sort of worked my way up in LA doing feature film development, which is like editing screenplays. And then I put the two together and started producing my own projects.
That's so cool. I love this story because I think it shows so clearly that there isn't a direct route necessarily.
No, there's no clear path. Everybody finds their own path, mm-hmm. I think, personally, according to their own strengths.
Mm-hmm.
I'm a big believer in working toward your own strengths. So if I felt really comfortable with reading and working with writers, I love working with writers. It's sort of a dialogue. That's what an editor is. You know, somebody who steps back from the material and says, I'm really feeling it here, but I'm really not feeling it here, and here's why. There's something very satisfying to me about that dynamic. And I find as a film producer, I can have that dynamic with a director as well, because that's then the visual, creative voice to tell the story that's on the page.
Well, and those communication skills are critical. I mean, frankly, in almost anything one might do in the world, but especially in a medium like film,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, because you were working with a lot of people and the producer is responsible for the sort of the broadest perspective on manifesting the movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I find there's a lot of confusion over what a producer actually does.
Sure.
And there's a lot of different kinds of producers.
Absolutely.
You know, executive producers, line producers, uh-huh. other kinds of producers.
Yes.
Can you remove some of that mystery?
Some of it. It's a little amorphous. It just is. In my experience, there's a difference between film and television, although that is blurring really significantly, I would say in the last 5 years particularly. When I was producing on the film side, there was much less crossover, and being an executive producer on a feature film was often being the creative voice on a set. When I worked on The Italian Job, for instance.
I love that movie, by the way.
Thank you. Thank you. That was a big movie.
Huge, crazy, huge
crazy,
movie.
Huge movie. Well, in that experience, I was working for a producer named Donald DeLine, who had a deal at Paramount. And Donald brought me into his company to produce with him. And handed me this script for The Italian Job, which needed work. So I worked on the script with the writers, and we ended up getting a sort of a blinking green light when Mark Wahlberg attached to the movie. It was a remake originally mm-hmm. of a movie that was made in the UK, but it's in the Paramount library. Paramount owned the rights. So we put the movie together with the cast that you are aware of, and the director F. Gary Gray, and then we had to make this massive movie, and Donald DeLine had not produced before. He had produced one movie, but he had run Touchstone Pictures. I came much more from the physical production background, and I had already produced a few movies with Sally Field, who I had partnered with at Disney. And then I had run a company at 20th Century Fox with a producer named Linda Obst, and we had made a couple of movies there while I was there. So I did a lot of the physical production on The Italian Job. I actually was the second unit producer. So what that means is Donald was with the cast on the first unit, which is the sort of primary unit. And I was with all the stuntmen and all the action, which is the second unit. And I had never done car chases and helicopter chases and boat chases, but I'm quite fearless, and I certainly can translate what I want versus what I'm seeing on the monitor. So it was me and a couple hundred men, and we got all of that footage that you see in the movie.
Those stunts and those chases, yeah. I just have to say, they're really memorable. I don't know how long since I've seen that movie. It might be 10 years now.
Yeah.
But some of those stunts and chases are unforgettable.
Yeah. We had a fantastic, we actually shifted second unit directors partway through filming to somebody that I just am still friends with and really admire. His name is Alexander Witt, and he has directed all of Ridley Scott's second units, and he's directed on his own, and he does all the Bond movies. So he came in and really elevated the level of the stunts to what you see in the movie, and that really, I think, made the movie the success that it was. And I loved doing a heist movie, like as a genre. It's not really, nobody's dies, it's not gruesome, it's very suspenseful, and it builds, and all the characters are paid off, and it's got a sort of a happy ending vibe to it, but it's very cool.
It's really cool, and it had a heart to it.
It has a really strong heart beating mm-hmm. in it, and I always think of an executive producer role, mm-hmm. or maybe this is part of how I define my role personally, is to make sure that that heart is really guarded and manifest in the movie as you're shooting it. Because if you don't get it, it's not going to be in the final movie. So I really see, I see that executive producing role partly as being the person on the set who has the heart of the movie in mind and is not distracted by, the main actor's agenda or the director's agenda or the studio's agenda, because it serves actually everybody if the emotion of the movie succeeds.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, it's hard to stay focused on that with hundreds of people moving around and all the moving parts in the movie. Obviously, an executive producer has a lot more responsibility than just the heart of the movie. You are hired by the studio or the financing entity to deliver the movie. So you have to justify and figure out how you're going to shoot the movie, where you're going to shoot the movie, how many days you need to shoot the movie, how much it's going to cost to hire the crew, who the crew should be, who the cast should be, and really what the best scenario that you can figure out for the making of that movie in its most successful iteration. Mm-hmm. You know, in your own mind, from the script all the way through to delivering the movie.
Given the parameters of the budget. And
yes.
And you
usually have some input into that. You know, nobody, when Paramount greenlights the Italian Job, they don't know the number that it's going to cost. You have to do all that figuring out, and you have to propose the number and why, and there's always a debate. Same with Descendants at Disney. You have to figure out the best place to shoot the movie, the best time, the number of days that you're going to need. It's a give and a take, and everybody has to agree ultimately before you start shooting on what the plan is. And then the executive producer has to be there day in and day out helping execute that.
It's an incredible job. I've had the pleasure of watching you.
Yes, thank
on set
you.
At
yes.
close quarters.
Yes. Well, you know, your daughter is the star of the movies, and it's, you know, part of the joy for me of doing Descendants and Descendants 2. I mean, without question, is that I love the kids. And being a support system, I mean, I'm not their mom, but I'm the set mom. The safety, the happiness, the health of the kids is part of what I really enjoy making those movies, you know? And then I have my dancing, right? Which I've always loved. I always wanted to work with Kenny Ortega since I was a dancer myself. I knew who he was. And the first director I ever worked with, a man named Emil Ardolino, directed Dirty Dancing, which Kenny choreographed.
That's crazy.
Yeah. So I had always wanted to work with Kenny from the time I was 20, you know? And it took me 30 years to get there, but I
did.
Got there. Exactly.
Twice
which
now.
Which is awesome. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Well, how involved, speaking of Descendants, are producers in the casting process for movies?
Yes.
And how do you interact with a casting director? Because you're not a casting director.
No. No. You know, Disney and Descendants has its own specific way of casting movies. They have a fantastic in-house casting director named Judy Taylor, who has been with the Disney Channel for many, many years, and really has sort of the pulse of all the kids who are coming and going and what their skill levels are, you know, what their backgrounds are, what they feel like in the room. So she's kind of the information central for Disney Channel movies and series and everything. And then we have a hired outside casting director on each movie to facilitate, because Judy is doing everything at the channel, to facilitate a worldwide search, basically, for each of the Descendants movies, because, you know, our Prince Ben comes from Australia, our Captain Hook's son comes from the UK, so each of those movies puts out a casting call all over the world for those characters, so I think it's my job, along with the director, along with the executives at the Disney Channel, to watch the auditions, to be in the room with the kids. And that goes on for months. It's actually a really protracted, difficult process for everybody. And I always feel terrible about that. You know, you just, I always try to be so nice in the room to all these kids because, you know, even the ones who are in contention for the roles, they end up coming back over and over and over again because, you know, these movies, particularly the Descendants movies, they're a big cast. It's an ensemble, so all the pieces have to fit together. So the kids, when they're under consideration, they're brought back to read with each other in different configurations. Even once they've individually passed the level of, well, we think she might be great for this or we think he might be great for this, but let's mix and match them and see how the dynamic feels, you know, with the script. It's a really protracted process, and it's hard to learn not to personalize it. It's not a criticism if, you know, you get one role or the other, or you're not cast in this movie, but you're cast in that movie. It's really just each project has its own life, its own reality, its own vibe to it. And that's true whether it's a feature film or it's a TV movie, in my experience. So there's a tone that gets kind of created during the casting process, trying to bring the words on the page to life with different groups of actors and see really what pops up to have the most reality and vibrancy to it. You know, what makes us laugh, what makes us cry in the room. And also, it's a very professional, grown-up thing to be able to do. You know, the kids have to know the material, they have to be prepared, and they have to be able to be themselves in front of, 10 adults sitting in a row looking at them in a camera recording them. It's really a hard thing to do, and I always have so much empathy for the kids and then the parents who are schlepping them back and forth and back and forth a million times. You just have to kind of breathe through it and know that it's not personal. It's just part of a putting together of the whole. You know, because every movie, you know, there were 150 crew people on Descendants, you know, so the cast and the crew, and it involves so many people, every movie, every project, that everything is process.
Yeah, and I think that deep understanding is something that young actors would do well to just hang on to in their hearts and know that, you know, if they get an opportunity even to audition for something
that's
exciting and big, it's like that alone is amazing and great. And the people who are making decisions, whether it's producers or casting directors or what have you. Or the studio in this case too. They may love you. They may believe in you.
Totally.
They may be excited by your level of talent and everything else. And still feel that for this project, you're not the right fit.
And it doesn't mean that they won't remember you for the next one, because they will.
Because they will.
They totally will.
Dylan Playfair told me something about...
It's true. He
auditioned for the first one, right?
Well, no, that's a different story, actually. So Dylan Playfair, who's in Descendants 2, and he plays the son of Gaston, Dylan Playfair auditioned for me... And the director, Chuck Minsky, for an independent movie that I produced called Skating to New York, which was made in Northern Ontario in 2013.
And he, as a hockey player...
As a hockey player.
Skating
skills. Exactly. And we loved him, but we had already met another kid, and that other kid had already... there was a whole series of things that happened, and Dylan didn't end up doing the movie, but I remembered him... And thought that he was such a great presence, and he has, he's very physical, he's funny, he's very able to use his body and his comedy. He's not trained as a dancer, and he was nervous about that doing Descendants 2, but I think he comes off great, and Kenny Ortega thought he was spectacular to work with, and he's in tons of our dance numbers, and he adds this really big physical presence to them that's wonderful. So you never know, you may not get one part one day, but it doesn't mean that that studio or that producer or that director won't remember you and bring you on for something else. It happens all the time.
Yep. And you lay the track every time you get in front of somebody.
That's right. So it's never think of it as a failure if you don't get cast in one thing, because it's going to lead you. Everything leads to everything else. It's not that big an industry, so people keep crossing paths.
It's really true. That's been our experience completely.
Yeah.
Can you take us inside some of the process that you went through specifically casting the Descendants movies?
Well, let me think about how I would... You know, I don't remember how many months were involved, but in Descendants 1, obviously we had our four VKs to cast, and it was finding a balance of those four key core parts. And that took a long time. And the kids kept coming back and coming back in different arrangements. And, you know, obviously the Disney Channel knows Dove and knew Cameron because they were both on series there already. I was kind of the new person because I was coming from feature films and I didn't know any of these kids' work before being hired to produce this movie, so I got to know them during the casting process. I had never seen either series until I got this job, and then I watched all of it. So I don't know what else I could really tell you besides...
Well, so specifically, so there's the process where you cast the main characters.
Yes.
But there were a lot of characters cast in Vancouver, right?
Yes.
In Canada.
Yes. Well, in the case of Descendants, because we film in Canada, because we film specifically in Vancouver, there's a tax incentive involved in producing movies in Canada versus producing them in the U.S. It's a big issue in the movie and TV business as a whole because so many studios are based in California and California doesn't have an equal tax incentive program to what a production can get in Canada. So that's always sad for people who live in California. You'd like to be able to work locally, but it's not economically viable.
But you get cast here.
You can cast here, but everybody that you bring from California, it costs more than somebody that you can cast locally because you have to travel them, you have to house them, you have to pay them a per diem. Whereas if you're casting somebody locally, not only do you get the tax incentive, but you don't have to pay all of that additional cost.
So there's a lot of local hires.
As much as humanly possible.
Mm-hmm.
The studio, you know, rightly, understandably, to not just bleed money, is trying to find the best talent in every role, whether it's acting, whether it's crew, but also balance the cost constantly. So we actually cast, in Descendants 1, most of our cast was Canadian, and that's true in Descendants 2. Actually, all of our dancers in Descendants 2 are Canadian, and we had 40 dancers.
Well, that's good news for Canadian dancers.
It is, actually.
You know?
It is, actually.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's employment for everybody, no
yeah.
matter what.
Everybody needs work.
Everybody needs work, but we definitely brought, obviously, our key cast from the U.S. again on Descendants 2, and we added in Mitchell from Australia and Thomas from the U.K., and Dylan is Canadian, and we didn't have the adult characters in the second Descendants that we had in the first. We have the same Belle and Beast and the same Fairy Godmother. Fairy Godmother is American, but Belle and Beast come from Canada.
That's right.
So again, it's always balancing finding the right people for the part and how many people can we find that are right for the part in Canada because it's less expensive if we're shooting there, and which people do we feel are must-haves who are from the U.S., who are the best talent, and the studio will spend the extra.
Yeah, well, that's good to have spelled out because I think there's a lot of confusion about that. And it also means that there are these places like the Vancouver area, the
right.
Toronto area,
right.
The
They're
Atlanta
production
area.
Hubs.
Production hubs where, you know, you may well be able to get steady work.
Yes. As an actor, you mean?
As an actor.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And crew moves to these cities also when they can. I mean, Vancouver had an enormous production boom on Descendants 2 compared to when we were there for Descendants 1 a couple of years before. There were literally twice as many shows in Vancouver, so we actually had trouble getting all of our crew locally. We had to bring, for instance, we had to bring a prop person from LA because we could not find a prop person in all of Canada.
Okay, Canada.
Yes.
All you props people.
Exactly.
There's room for you.
Exactly.
Well, so what do you do on a daily basis as a producer? What does that look like?
Well, there are different phases of being a producer. So when you're in development or pre-production, I'm in Los Angeles. it's before the movie has started shooting, and I'm working with the studio on the script, on budgets, on schedules, on casting. That's all in Los Angeles. Once we are happy with the script and it's greenlit, once we cast the script, at least the LA portion of it by and large, and we have enough of a location, since usually I travel to Canada a couple of times and look at the locations before I actually move to Canada. Once we have a fix on the budget and the schedule, even though it's not locked down, I will go to Canada. This time I think I went on Descendants 2 probably a month before the director, maybe even 6 weeks. And I did a lot of location scouting with the key crew, production designer, costume designer, primarily, and then the associate assistant directors. You have to put a whole crew of people together so that when the director arrives, he can start making creative choices. You show him various locations for different parts of the movie. You show him various set options, various costume options. And then you have to bring the kids, the cast, up ahead of time for rehearsals and costume fittings. And in a musical, particularly, the producer has to have a sense of how to balance the needs of the production and the director and the cast and crew so that everybody's prepared for everything that they need to have ready for when shooting starts. So it's a big puzzle. It's almost like having a working knowledge of what the most important things are to do first, when to slot in, prioritizing dance rehearsal. To Kenny, dance rehearsal is kind of paramount. But Kenny needs to also see the locations. We need to be building the sets so that they're ready for when filming starts. So we have to make decisions about the sets early enough so that there's time to build them by the time shooting starts. How much time do the kids need so that they don't hurt themselves while they're rehearsing, so that they're not exhausted when shooting starts, so that all of their costumes have been fitted and prepared. You know, we have water
and
in
the
Descendants
wigs.
To the and wigs the are a nightmare.
Sword fighting training.
Sword fighting training. We have water in Descendants 2. So yeah. We had to test, you know, heating the water, dancing in the water. Is it safe? How much water? You know, how are we going to get the water into the, you know, how hot are the lights? It's a lot of how do you make sure that it's absolutely safe? It's a lot of process, again, and a lot of common sense, but also a lot of, you know, past experience, I think, for me, of producing many movies with many moving parts. You have to not be intimidated by how many things are happening at the same time and have the capacity to hold lots of different agendas going at the same time and to balance them so that everybody feels heard, everybody's getting the information that they need. But you have to kind of say, no, I'm not going to do this right now. We're going to let you know that next week. First, we're going to do this. Mm-hmm. So it's very much a puzzle pieces process.
What's in the best interest of the movie?
Of the movie at the
times.
Time. Exactly. And also, you know, the studio will have needs. The studio will particularly want problems solved having to do with cost, problems solved having to do with casting, problems solved having to do with, you know, like you said, the wigs, the costumes. These are big decisions because they impact the franchise. They impact the merchandising of the toys at the end of the movie. So, you know, there are schedules to keep in mind beyond even just shooting the movie. It's also when the toy company needs to start manufacturing the dolls so that they're ready for when the movie's going to come
out. Which means the hair and the makeup and the wardrobe looks have to be set by then.
Totally. And we haven't even talked about the music.
Ugh.
Because the kids are all singing their own songs themselves, so the music has to be, you know, there are six songs plus six production numbers. So songs and dances, plus there are two reconceptions of Disney classics, mm-hmm. right? So these have to be decided upon. Lots of different songwriters are contacted and give us sort of demos of possibilities. Kenny and I listen to those with the writers, with the studio, which songs advance the story in and of themselves, because that's what musicals are. The music and the dancing advances the story. It's not just everything stops and we sing. It's storytelling within the song.
Yes.
And character development. So we have to decide those. The kids have to record all of those before they start rehearsing the dancing to the music. So it's really putting the puzzle pieces together. You have to be able to do a lot of things at the same time and keep moving, keep flowing with it. Not get too hung up in any one thing. Keep problem solving. And it's a lot of people. It's a lot of people. So for me, I really try to know as many people's names as I possibly can. I try to learn everybody's name on the crew, not just the cast. And you try to treat everybody with dignity, with respect. You try to make the environment not only safe, but pleasant. Because mm-hmm. people work really hard. They work long hours. And, you know, we have lots of, you know, labor laws, safety laws, child welfare laws. And we are vigilant about all of those. But it's a lot of work for a lot of people. And you try to make people feel respected and well-fed. Very important. Good catering. Very important.
Good catering. I have to say you're brilliant. I mean, at all of the things that you do, but the good catering's a big deal.
It's big! It's big!
Those caterers are outstanding.
It's really important. If you do not have decent food, the crew is not happy.
Nobody's happy.
You know, also, the kids, the dancers, they need to eat healthy. They need to, you know, really be watched out for,
yeah.
you know, and a lot of our kids, I call them kids, but they don't have parents on the set anymore because they're 18 or they're older.
Yeah. They're young adults.
They're young adults, but sometimes they haven't been away from home yet. Mm-hmm. Sometimes they haven't lived on their own yet, you know, and they have to eat and they have to sleep and they have to be dressed warmly. And I can't tell you how often that they don't know how to do that by themselves. So I have a tendency to sort of always be looking around and kind of taking everybody's temperature in my own mind, you know. Do you have a sweater with you today? Did you eat enough just now? I think you need a nap.
Yeah.
You know, and it sounds ridiculous, but everybody has to be functioning really well for the movie to work.
Or it goes down.
Yeah.
Or it goes down.
It certainly can.
What do you love about producing? Because clearly you're very passionate about what you do and you're
Thank
very
you.
Good at it.
Well, I guess, enamored of taking something that is written down that really moves me on the page and putting it into a film and making it real. You know, I love that I make something good, that I'm proud of, that makes people happy, that moves them, that, you know, makes them laugh, that makes them, you know, wowed, like you're wowed by the Italian Job, by the stunts or whatever. And, you know, the movies then exist. They're like actual entities that exist hopefully forever, but certainly for a very long time. So it's like making something out of nothing. And I also really like people, so I really like being the positive engine behind supporting a lot of people. I unfortunately was raised to be a supporter of other people, and I think sometimes to my own detriment, but I think it's part of being good at my job. because I just have a lot of energy naturally for reading other people and for processing, trying to address and problem solve. You know, I have a lot of energy. I'm a smart person. I work hard, and it gives me a lot of satisfaction to make a good movie that I am proud of, that really delivers what it sets out to do. And I've done lots of different genres, really, and I love the challenge of doing different kinds of movies. It's not like I've spent my whole career doing musicals, not at all. So doing the musicals now is actually really fun for me, and uses a whole bunch of my past or my skills or the things that I enjoy. And before that, you know, I was very proud of doing an education. My daughter was the age of the character in the movie when I made that movie. So it was personally very meaningful for me to tell a story as the mother of a 17-year-old that really resonated to me, to my daughter. She came to Sundance when the movie premiered and watched it premiere with me. I was really proud of that. And when I did the Italian Job, I was really proud of not being afraid, actually, of standing on that set with all of those guys and the helicopter and the boat and the cars and the, you know, and actually making it good.
Yeah.
You know, being wowed by it. You know, it's, I like a challenge, and I'm proud of not being afraid to see it through. I think there's something very satisfying also being a woman for me, knowing what I'm talking about, because I've worked my way up from an assistant to a producer over a long period of time, so I've had a lot of work experience. And I bring that experience to bear now on everything that I produce. And I'm sure if somebody can find a better answer than I can, or a better producer, have at it, you know, because I'm doing the best that I can. And I sleep really well at night, you know?
Well, as you should, as you should. Now that you've produced two global hits for Disney.
Thank you.
Which is really amazing.
Hopefully.
Descendants 2 comes out in a matter of weeks. Yeah. And I'm just feeling very...
We're feeling very hopeful.
Very chipper about the second one being as successful.
It's beautiful, and it's bigger and better than the first.
It actually is.
It really is.
And that's, you know, for a sequel, like sequels, that one had a lot to live up to.
For sure. And we really wanted to exceed the first one, and I feel confident that we did.
I do, too.
I've seen
it twice now, and I just can't wait for everybody else to see it. Yeah. And you guys really hit it out of the park. So
thank you.
I'm going to go out on a small limb.
Okay.
Not a very big limb. Okay. And say two global successes.
Thank you.
Any advice for young actors who want to be on the Disney Channel? Like, you don't work for Disney.
No.
You're an independent producer.
Oh, yeah.
But you now have, like, a lot of experience in the last 3-4 years.
Well, I think... You know, it's funny. I guess my advice would be, you know, be very informed about what's out there. You know, what's out there in the movie theaters, what's out there on TV. And I think if, as a kid, if you relate to something, you like something, you think something's great, and you see yourself that way, you could see yourself being a character in Descendants, for instance. If you see yourself doing some big sci-fi action movie, you know, like Boo-Boo Stewart was doing before he did Descendants, and he's got all of this stunt training, and he does parkour, and he's, you know, gorgeous and talented. If you see yourself like your daughter, like Dove, who has the most amazing voice, she can sing anything. She's just so talented. You know, work toward the things that you relate to personally, where you see yourself fitting in. Things that you like. Usually creative people, they find one another when they're of the same mind. I really have experienced that throughout my career. So if I always wanted to work with Kenny Ortega, you know, because I had seen his work, you know, over time, and I thought, I would love to work with him. When I finally met him 3 years ago or whatever, I loved him.
Yeah.
And we get along great, you know, because we share a sensibility, I think, and a history. We speak the same language. So I would say to kids and parents of kids who are looking for where they fit, I would look to what you like, you know, because chances are what you like and where you see yourself fitting, the people who then meet you will say, oh, yeah, I see why you feel right for us or why you like us. I think it kind of is a mutual process, and I think you can generate it by seeking out the places, like if you see yourself on Disney Channel and it's a very diverse channel, there are very young kids, there are kids who are already young adults, there's a big range of programming. I have a friend who's producing the Andy Mack series.
Oh, I love that thing.
It's fantastic writing. Mm-hmm. And so that's a whole other side to me of the Disney Channel, you know, but that's going to speak to some of the kids who are out there, mm-hmm. you know? So I think just watch everything, read everything, and really push hard to inform yourself, take classes, learn how to dance if you want to be a dancer. Learn how to sing if you want to be a singer. You have to work on yourself. Learn your sides before you go to an audition. You know, go to an acting class. I'm a big believer in educating yourself, and there's no way to do that without a lot of practice and hard work. You know, and I think actually some of the discipline of being a ballet student translates to me through my whole life of, you know, you do the job until it's done, until you actually know that you're finished, until you know that it's the best you can do, until you know it's right or it's going to work. You have to keep working at it to develop your skills, and you're never done, you know? So even if you're the prettiest kid in the room, can you be working on your acting? Can you be working on your dancing? Can you be working on your singing? If those are things that you're interested in doing, practice them. Because practice is how every professional person achieves the level of success that they've achieved. I can't tell you all the award-winning directors, writers, actors that I've worked with, you know, not kids even, just adults who have honed their skills time and time and time again, just by working at it. And you have to fail sometimes. I mean, I didn't get into the New York City Ballet, you know, when I was 18 years old. That set me off on another path. So I used my strengths to make that path successful for myself. You know, it's not a defeat. It's a, okay, so I'm not going to do that. So where else am I strong? Okay, I'm going to try that road because I'm strong at that. And keep trying stuff until you find the place where you fit.
This is the best advice for anybody, no matter what they want to do.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.
I know, I'm just going to say that was just brilliant global advice. And yes. And I ask about the Disney
process,
Channel.
The P word.
Yeah. Because so many of the listeners of this podcast are interested in that. But
sure.
Truthfully, that is great advice for anyone who wants to be not only an actor in general, but just
business.
A successful human being.
Yes, yes.
In the business or outside of the business.
Because you don't know when you're a kid, for sure. I mean, I didn't know what a producer was when I was a kid. It's not like I set out to be a producer.
No.
I didn't know what it was. So one thing led me to another thing, but if I didn't try, you know, if I didn't keep coming back and trying and going toward the things that I really liked, I really had passion for, I think my passion, it communicates itself to the person who I'm meeting, right?
Yep.
And you want, when you're hiring somebody, you want to hire somebody who's going to give you their best, you know, because it's all a lot of work. So you want people to be enthusiastic and hardworking and, you know, serious about wanting to do something good.
That's beautiful. Anything else you'd like to share?
Thanks for inviting me.
Thank you for taking the time.
I adore your daughter, and I can't wait to see how the Descendants 2 changes her life, because I think it's gonna.
Descendants 2 is gonna be amazing, and I can't wait either. We adore you right back.
Thank you.
Seriously.
Thank you. Fingers crossed for Descendants 3.
Oh boy, fingers crossed.
Putting
Meanwhile,
positive energy out there.
Yeah, everybody please. Look for Descendants 2 on multiple platforms. 6, I hear now. July 21st.
I heard 7 now because it's also simultaneously in Canada.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. So this is the first time I think Disney is putting a show out simultaneously across literally every Disney television platform. So it's a big deal.
It's huge.
We're very proud.
It's going to be so fun. Thank you.
Thanks for having me. Okay.
Thanks for listening to Hometown to Hollywood. If you enjoy this podcast, subscribe. Go to BonnieJWallace.com and sign up on the podcast page to get exclusive, inspirational stories and insider info sent to your inbox every week. If you need help figuring out just how to navigate the career of a young actor, buy my book, The Hollywood Parents Guide, on Amazon. And for one-on-one coaching that can save you literally thousands of dollars and months and years of wasted time, book an hour consultation with me over Skype or in LA. Just go to BonnieJWallace.com and click on the consultation page. For about the same price of an hour with an acting coach, you can get peace of mind and a detailed action plan. Thanks. Remember, the future belongs to those who believe in their dreams.